and you're listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger back this week. Mika Villas is on assignment, as she likes to say, so she will not be with us this week. But Danny, good to have you back. I have dearly missed you.
Thank you. Thank you. I have, of course, missed you as well. And the world of wrestling, I feel so disconnected from when I had to miss several shows in the Atlanta area, several large shows, no less. So hopefully, you know, my assignment here in this territory will end soon, and I can be back home and go to shows sooner rather than later.
For sure. And of course, one of the shows that you missed was Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment's Cease and Desist show, The Musical, which we got to see, me and everybody else who went, the return of Marty Bell to Roar Division, and, well, a few debuts, and I'll just come on and say it. This Effie character, I don't like. And don't get me wrong, it's not the character. It's just I call him a character, right?
Yeah.
For personal reasons. I have complete bad distaste for this man. And I'll trash him anytime I get a chance. Then again, I'm not going to trash him a lot because that also gave him publicity. So I didn't care. And now he's returning for the season finale. Now, you've been to Fest. That's apparently a place he wrestles at.
He's the champion at Fest. He actually defeated Su Yung for that championship. I know that you're not particular, and we've talked multiple times about any kind of character that, like, comedy-based type characters or characters that utilize a lot of that in their entertainment style, let's say. You're not necessarily a fan of. Typically, you like people who are a bit more serious in their wrestling. You know, I mean, you do have your exceptions, but most of the characters that are kind of a little bit more lighthearted, you're not necessarily a fan of. From what I heard, from what I've talked to people, like, I know some of these people like Effie, but I think that he didn't get the kind of reactions in Atlanta that he gets at other places, because I think in Atlanta, we've had, in AWE specifically, we've had other flamboyant type characters. I mean, we've had Ashton Starr there since towards the beginning, who's a very flamboyant personality. We've had other characters come through, but I think when Effie goes to a lot of cities in the Southeast, it's the first time most of those fans have seen a character or a performer like him in a long time. And so I think that's where he kind of gets the rave reviews he gets, because some people really don't like it because of that persona. Other people really do because of something they're not used to seeing. But in Atlanta, in AWE, we definitely have had our fair share of performers that are a little bit eccentric. I mean, even you look at the Gymnasty Boys, they're kind of eccentric in their own right. You look at Ashton Starr, you look at, you know, some of the different people that we've had come into the Roar division or into the heavyweight division, into the Battle Royal division. I mean, you can look at guys. I mean, we've had Mr. Sleaze, you know, we've had Joey Ryan in the past. Like, we've had our fair share of performers who do these different kinds of, who have a very unique personalities like Effie does. I'm kind of on the fence about Effie. He does okay. I don't really dislike him. I don't really like him. I haven't seen enough of him, but I do think he's a much better live performer than he is watching him on tape, so to speak. Like, I've seen some of the matches online and I just don't care for it, but seeing him live is kind of, I'm a little more interested. I'm really kind of anxious to see how he does at the season finale. So a lot of people saw him for the first time at Season to Sis the Musical. You know, as he claimed, the unsolicited help of Amy Rose, he gets the win, setting up the rematch with Ashton. So perhaps you know, a little bit different crowd, maybe a little bit bigger crowd. People seeing him not for the first time, seeing him for the second time, maybe he'll get a somewhat of a different reaction. But yeah, I know that you're not necessarily a fan of his, but I think some of the fanatics will enjoy him. And that's one of the things that I always like about AWE is that there is kind of a varying degree of match types. There is a varying degree of performers. You know, you do have some people who are a little bit sillier. You do have people who get in there and do very, very, very technical, very, very Southern strong style, you know, type stuff. But then you also have the whole variety show that the professional wrestling brings. One of the things I did notice about the season is this, not just Effie, but there did seem to be, it seemed to be a much younger, more up-and-coming roster than we have had at a lot of shows. Kind of reminiscent almost of some of the quad shows in the quad series where you'd see a lot of faces for the first time, or maybe faces you'd seen before, but they'd be kind of featured more predominantly. So that was kind of interesting to see, you know, I mean, yet again, new faces, and then some faces that we've seen a long time getting kind of a little bit more of an independent spotlight to shine. So this was the first AWE show that I have missed since Homegrown, since the very first Homegrown in 2016, can't remember, my years get mixed up, in about 3 years though. Since I started attending AWE shows, the first AWE show I've actually missed. So I hope you guys did the polite 10 bell salute for me at the beginning of the show, as I was not there to attend.
Did you do one for me when I missed the show on the Game Expo?
Of course, both nights.
I appreciate you lying to me.
Yeah, well, fake it till you make it. So
it's my motto.
It's not a lie if other people believe. It's not. Here's the question: it's not a lie if you believe it. So if I believe what I'm telling you, even if it's BS, it's not a lie. So I just have to convince myself of untruths before I share them with others.
So now we're heading into AWE's season finale, Homegrown 2018. And we know we're going to get a three-way match between Joe Black, Chip Day, and Eddie Kingston for the JoJo Wrestling crown. Also a rematch between Asha Starr and Effie. And we're going to get the couple of debuts for Roar.
Yes. Like big. And well, I mean, one of them, both of them are on the, I would consider bigger just because they're people who have been making waves in the rest, you know, for various different reasons.
Yeah, so Zeta from former NXT superstar, she will be there, as well as Harlow, who we last saw at MLA Worldwide, but she's been making a lot of appearances nationwide. I think in a lot of big time matches, mind you, not any, you know, little thing. She's had some of your favorites ever in the ring with her, and I've heard nothing but positive reviews about it, all those matches.
Yeah, well, so okay, so let's talk about Zayda a little bit first. So yes, she was former NXT, you know, formerly with NXT. She did compete in the first Mae Young Classic, but hadn't really been used on television much. She's been released, but she's hitting the ground running, and she's taken a lot of bookings at a lot of different places, not just AWE, but I think she'll be a Queens of Combat at the end of the month, part of the Raleigh SuperCon. I've seen her advertised for other places. I think she was at MLW debuting recently. So they're just hitting the ground running, trying to do as many places as she can to keep wrestling and keep getting herself out there. So I'm actually excited to see what she can bring to the table. after having been in the NXT system for so long. She looked like she had good promise in the Mae Young Classic. Like you're like, okay, I could see where she could possibly, be a bigger player in NXT, in the wrestling world in NXT someday. So now, we can possibly share more in that journey as she continues to grow. In the Roar division, of course, it's going to be a lot different type of competition with the no rule stipulation to all matches versus what she may have done in her time in NXT. Now, you mentioned Harlow O'Hara as well, making her debut. I know a lot of fans, some of the Fanatics have been asking for her to make her debut in Roar for quite a few months now. She's been doing a lot with Nova Pro. She's been doing a lot with Battle Club up in New Jersey and New York. She took part in one of the Rise and Shimmer weekends where she did one of the Sparkle Match tryouts. But in the last few months, she's even been in, had pinfall victories over Jessica Havoc. She pinned Sue Young in a gauntlet match. Her and Sue Young had a very, very hard-hitting last woman standing match that was the main event of Battle Club Pro Show that Harlow actually ended up winning. Harlow will also be facing Shazza McKenzie for Nova Pro when Shazza makes her return back to the United States in a few weeks. Harlow is definitely one of those stars who's on the rise now. She is still very young in the wrestling business, I think maybe a year and a half at this point. I think the biggest thing that draws people in is her persona, her presence. She's one of those performers that when you see her, she busts through the curtain, she makes you take notice. And as she's getting better and better in the ring and better in all aspects of her game, there's already a lot of eyes on her. I think she'll be taking on Mia Yim in singles action in two different promotions within the next couple months. So she definitely is a star on the rise. And that's kind of what they mentioned, what was mentioned on the Facebook post when they announced that both Zeta and Harlow would be coming to Roar, is that, as some of the roster members move on to other stages of their careers, Roar and AWE in general are always open to bringing in new talent, giving new opportunities to people. So we have two, and there, I imagine there'll be quite a few more to come, especially, maybe not necessarily for this show, but I imagine we'll get some names announced that we maybe haven't seen in a while. I think Marty Bell is a big one. I was really excited to see that Marty would be coming back. She got the win at season to fifth. Maybe we see her back as well at the season finale. Marty Bell, I felt she was the first like star of the Roar division. You had your up and comings from Georgia, and then you had Marty come in who, at that time had just kind of started, was still with TNA doing the Dollhouse. And so I felt she carried herself very, very well, like a star, like a presence, like somebody you needed to take notice of. And so I feel that she really helped that division in the early days. She came back and she showed why she made herself one of the queens of that, why she was kind of one of the queens of that division. Getting the win over two very game competitors. I've always been a proponent of women's wrestling. Roar to me is always a lot of fun. Always really enjoy the talent that comes and goes through there. So I'm definitely excited to see what Zeta can bring, what Harlow can bring, and what other faces we might see. I mean, they were just announced as appearing. We don't know if they'll be fighting against each other. We don't know if there'll be a one-on-one match or a Roar bringing the Roar for War to the season finale, where it's a four women, first pinfall wins it. We don't know if there's going to be multiple Roar women's matches on the show. It's still early. Things are still kind of coming together and being announced.
Yeah, that would be interesting, seeing Four War come back. It's definitely one of the gimmick matches that I really enjoyed. I think that for Roar, it's one of the signature things that we've seen that's really worked, and that would be really fun. I mean, you think about all the different names you've mentioned, and you know, think about the other names that are still out there that we haven't seen come through AWE. But there's definitely a lot of great talent that's come through and been on Roar. And I can't wait to see what the future holds. Yeah, so looking at that, the main event, the triple threat that we were supposed to originally get at Cease and Desist, then we ended up not getting it. And now we're going to get it on the season finale. Do you favor anybody? I mean, of course, with Joe Black, it means the hierarchy is always looming. But it looks like, to me, both Chip and Eddie, you know, they got to be at their last straw right now. There's like, Eddie has come close twice, you know, and first at getting the shot and then winning the belt. And, you know, Chip, you know, he was a champion and he wants to exercise his rematch clause. And, of course, his ongoing battle with that hierarchy, making no friends. Who are you favoring going into the season finale?
Well, I mean, yes, the hierarchy is looming, you know, always looming, possibly with Joe Black there, but we haven't seen them interject themselves in a lot of Joe Black's singles matches. The match that Joe Black, where he beat Eddie Kingston for the first time, in order to earn his championship match, it was clearly one-on-one. There was no hierarchy interference during that match. Joe beat Eddie Kingston one-on-one, 1-2-3. The matchup where Joe Black defeated Chip Day to win the GWC, it was Joe Black pinning Chip Day's shoulders to the mat, 1-2-3. The match is season to fist, you know, up until Chip's interference, it was one-on-one. Eddie versus Joe. And, you know, Joe is, as much as I'm not a fan of the hierarchy and their politicking in the back and their interference and tendency to bend the rules and kind of, you know, bend AWE to their will, so to speak. Joe Black is an outstanding performer. He's one of my favorite guys in wrestling now to watch. He's so good and so talented, and I feel that he always kind of leaves me wanting more. And that's the thing that a lot of independent wrestlers, I think, have difficulty with understanding, because they want to go out and show out every single time, and you want to show all that you can do and wow people and wow the promoters. But the problem is, if you empty your entire bag of tricks on your first night in theory, what do you have left the second time you go back? You're just going to do the same moves again? Like, and Joe very well may do the same move. He may not have this big bag of tricks, but he finds a way to make you care, to make you emotionally invested, to make you want to see more without having to just do a bunch of crazy moves. He gets you invested in a match, and Eddie Kingston is very good at that too. That's why Eddie Kingston's been so successful in his career. You know, Eddie Kingston's been champions of some of the biggest promotions in America. You know, he's one of only a handful of people to be the Shikara Grand Champion. He's, you know, been champion so many other places over the years, you know, in tag or in singles. But then you bring in, you know, you have Joe, who is just an outstanding competitor, who's probably at the top of his game. Like, he's at the best he's ever been. Every single time we see him go out, I feel Joe Black just gets better and better. But we started kind of seeing something in Chip Day we maybe haven't seen in a while, or we may never have seen before. you know, it, we started kind of seeing something that maybe Chip is willing to do whatever it takes to get that championship back. And we know he's been a part of the hierarchy. He's been against the hierarchy. He's been with them and against them, seemingly back and forth a few times. But even when he was a member of the hierarchy, he still usually tried to play by the rules of wrestling and prove that he was better than people, prove that that he didn't need to cheat, to bend the rules. He didn't need this kind of outside interference or what have you in order to win, because his ego wanted to show that he could be as good as anybody and beat them without having to think to rule breaking. But with him walking out on, you know, his kind of his partner earlier in the night and running in and causing a disqualification and attacking Eddie and Joe singly, and then, you know, essentially leaving with the belt, like, does that mean that Chip might be, is now kind of turning this leaf where he might be willing to break the rules, to do whatever is necessary to win? And so if Chip Day comes in with that mindset, with that attitude, that that he can, you know, be willing to break the rules, he might be, he might walk away with that championship. He could, you know, if he's going to try to play more in a strategy, because a triple threat match, of course, is a different type format than most matches. You know, you don't have to necessarily pin the champion. It could be kind of chaotic at times. And if he can pick his spot and find and be willing to bend the rules and do whatever it takes to win, he might just be able to pick a chance and pick a spot and walk out being, you know, the first ever two-time GWC championship holder. To me, this one really could go in any direction. And I know that that's kind of, that gets cliche heard and thrown around in wrestling, but I honestly think that any of these three men are capable of walking out with that championship come the end of the night.
Yeah, and now that's not the only title match that we will be seeing, as we will have tag team championships on the line. And yes, there will be belts at the end of the night for the winners of this match, as the new tag team champions, Anthony Henry and J.D. Drake, will be going... It will be defending their titles against the Carnies at the season finale. And that right there spells chaos.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both teams have pretty much built their careers in AWE on creating chaos, especially within the last few months. And so we're finally getting belts after, you know, the belts were essentially stolen from AW management. You know, we were never really able to find any clues on what happened to them. I don't even know if it was, you know, if it was something, somebody within a wrestling circle, or literally just somebody stole them hoping they could sell them for a quick buck. Like, at this point, it's, you know, any kind of evidence or whatever may have been long gone. So apparently, when the Submission Squad threatened MC Josh Wheeler and got in his face and attacked, you know, threatened to not show up if the belts weren't there and all that, they were picking on the wrong person, because basically Drake and Henry, you know, they went right to the president. They went right to Paul, President Paul, and threatened him physically. And that's pretty much the man who said, okay, fine, we're getting belts. Like, so the Submission Squad, after all the things they were doing and talking about how we're the champions and we're not getting belts, Drake and Henry become champions. And, you know, for their very first defense, there's going to be championship belts crowned. So they apparently, not to say that they're necessarily more dangerous than the Submission Squad. I mean, they did best the Submission Squad in a wrestling match, but they apparently know the right tree to shake. But I mean, the Carnies have been creating mayhem of their own for a long time, and they've had two of the most infamous matches in AWE history, the dog collar match. They came on the losing end against then the Sound of the Fury, and then they ended up being on the winning end of the cage match against the Hierarchy. So we know the kind of violence that the Carnies can take and dish out. So I think in this one, I have to go with the Carnies. I think there's a lot more to them, the things they're kind of willing to do, and they might be able to play against kind of just the brute violence that Drake and Henry bring. I think the Carnies have a few more tricks up those Carney sleeves. But I'm very excited to see these new belts, see what they look like. You know, it's been quite a long time since we had championship belts. And the original belts, you know, had a lot of history within Georgia, but they were not specifically made for Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. So I'm very excited that we will finally have tag team belts. I'm excited to see them.
Yeah, definitely. Me too. Finally, we're going to get tag team belts in Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment back. The belts. The championship has always been there. It has been defended. But no actual physical belts. So we're going to see those. The Georgia Wrestling Crown tag team titles will be there. Great! It will be great to see the Carnies. I love seeing the Carnies every time they're anywhere.
Yes.
So also, so staying here in Atlanta, of course, another show you missed, Mucha Lucha Atlanta, MLA Worldwide, MLA 16. And, you know, the war between Ricardo Ordaz Jr., the promoter, and Vardy Morales and Poder Nocturno, never ending. These guys hate each other, and, well, he finally got his revenge. He brought a lot of friends, you know, with Mecha Wolf, Serpentico, and these two guys who were unknown to everybody from Puerto Rico. And so this Puerto Rican faction now, and Ricardo Ordaz fed Poder Nocturno and Vadi Morales dog food. He treated them like dogs and disrespected them by placing the Puerto Rican flag on their laying bodies. Of course, the fans, most of them of Mexican descent or heritage, threw all types of stuff, bottles, food, liquids into the ring. There was a lot of chaos. I mean, we expected chaos, and man, we got more chaos than we expected, to be honest. It was a scene. So what do you think? Can these guys finally call it? Or do you see any end to this war between Ricardo Ordaz Jr., Vadi Morales, and Poder Nocturno? And now Mecha Wolf, Serpentico, they're all involved now. It's only gonna get worse before it can get better.
I think you said it right. It really can only get worse before it gets better. I know that. Now, you can look at the history between all these men. You know, Vari Morales was once friends with, good friends with Ricardo, and fighting for MLA's behalf against people like Serpentico, against Mecha Wolf, fighting against Poder Nocturno, and, you know, Vari felt betrayed. He felt kind of slighted by his one-time friend, and he kind of turned his back on Ricardo at first, and joined up with Poder Nocturno. And then it seems that Ricardo, you know, had to one-up what Vari Morales did by when Vari and Poder Nocturno attacked Ricardo and Ricardo's father. you know, Ricardo essentially kind of made a deal with the devils of his own company. You know, he brought in a lot of men who are known to create chaos, men that he's never really seen eye to eye with. But I guess that just kind of goes to show what he's willing to do to get possibly even or instill some kind of pain and punishment on Varin Morales. I don't know where it goes from here. You know, I don't know if this is a long-time faction that Ricardo is now going to kind of sponsor all these guys together, came in like mercenaries, and he just kind of paid them to do the one-time job, you know, to kind of try to take out and inflict the punishment on Varre and Poder Nocturno. But anything that we've seen about Poder Nocturno and Varre in their war against each other is that they are too proud to allow somebody else to get the one up on them and not try to retaliate. So I think that's the biggest thing, is what kind of retaliation can we expect to see from Poder Nocturno and Varre Morales? Now, the way the factions are set up, if these are so-called factions, they're quite outnumbered, you know, 2-6 at least. So I would think that Varre and Poder might try to either amass an army of their own or try to pick out 2-on-2, you know, call out to Ricardo, pick 2 of those guys to fight them in who knows what kind of brutal match that we could see. I mean, like I said, the wars we saw Poder Nocturno and Varre Morales in against each other, you know, death matches, the Blue Terrier match, they had the cage match where Poder Nocturno threw Poder Nocturno and Varre fell off the top of that cage, you know, like it. I'm almost kind of afraid to see what they might try to bring, what kind of match they might want to have. And, I mean, it'll be exciting for the fans, but anybody who's going to be in that blast zone is, you know, better wear your eye protection, because there'll probably be a lot of light tubes, a lot of barbed wire, skewers, staple guns, doors, broken, you know, possibly broken glass. I don't know. It's going to be violent. It's going to be messy. Whatever comes next. That's the real thing I only know for sure, that it's going to be violent and messy.
Yeah, it's, to me, I just, after seeing the chaos, and, you know, be glad that you weren't there ringside doing commentary, because who knows what would have landed your way. But man, it's, anything's possible, and the crowds are wild, they love the action, and these wrestlers in MLA, they're willing to go to any extent. We've seen that firsthand, just in, as they've done so much to each other. You talked about Varre and going through that cage. You know, it's kind of crazy. Now that seeing Varre and Poder as friends together, and now they're allies against Ricardo. Man, it's wild, bro. I don't know where this is all going, but it is crazy. And it's going to get crazier. Now moving on, let's go ahead and chat a little bit about one of the premier tournaments in the South. And of course, that is the annual Cynic City Invitational. Of course, this year, a lot of great talent, some returning talent and some new talent. It's really excited to see what comes of it. So let's go over the first round matchups. Now, there's no brackets for the SCI, as you know, they like to, on day 2, go over all the winners and then pair up, you know, different matchups for round 2. So let's go ahead and take a look at some of these, and I'd like to get your thoughts, Danny, on who you like for these matches. So first, let's start with 2 Cole Scorpio versus AJ Gray.
Okay, so one of the things that the Scenic City has done, and especially as the you know, as we you know, they've only done this for a few years now, but each year you get bigger names. You know, I think this year you have, you know, legends who are still trying to pave their way and show that they're still as good as anybody on the scene. You have a lot of up and coming people. You have current people who are, you know, who are at the top of the independent wrestling world. So it's making for a lot of unusual matchups. And this first one, Too Cold Scorpio versus AJ Gray, is just that. AJ Gray is the guy who a lot of people are touting as, you know, as a future major player in professional wrestling. Too Cold Scorpio, I mean, he's been a major player in professional wrestling in the 90s. You know, he was big in WWF as Flash Funk. He was a former champion in ECW as Too Cold Scorpio. And he's kind of been making sporadic appearances over the last year or so. But he's feeling that, you know, that Too Cold can still go. But in this one, I think AJ Gray's got it. I think although Too Cold has the experience edge, I think AJ Gray is just going to be a bit hungrier, and he's going to do what he needs to do in order to win this match, because he knows that even winning just this first round match against Too Cold Scorpio, if AJ Gray does not win the whole tournament, I think just knowing that a win over Too Cold Scorpio could raise his stock very, very quickly in the independent wrestling world. I think he's going to be training and treating this match as it should be, which is, you know, I mean, this is essentially the biggest match of his young career. This will have more eyes on it than probably any singles match he's ever had. And I think he's gonna train hard, and he's gonna do what he needs to get the victory.
All right, I like that one. Next one, Ike Cross versus Corey Hollis. Of course, Corey Hollis won his spot by winning the Scenic City Rumble.
Yeah, and I think Corey Hollis has this matchup. Ike has a lot of energy and he has a lot of potential, but I don't think he's at Hollis's level yet. I think Hollis is, you know, the last year or so we've kind of seen him in different promotions in PWX, even in Anarchy. In Georgia, I think we've seen this new leaf that Corey Hollis is kind of tired of being passed over. He's tired of being seen for so many years as a guy who, you know, who's just on the cusp of breaking out. And I think he's turned over this attitude where he's no longer going to let people use him as a stepping stone. He's no longer going to be just almost the guy. He wants to be the guy. And I think this very well could be his tournament to win if he can get those right, you know, matchups early on and find a way to break through the first couple rounds without getting too worn down or possibly injured. I think Corey Hollis, this year could be his tournament.
Indeed, I definitely agree with you on that one again. Gary J. Kane Justice. I think this one's one of the ones that in my mind could be, and I got two or three of them, that could be show stealers for match of the night.
Yeah, I mean, my first time seeing Kane Justice was at the first Action Wrestling show. We saw him against Fred Yehi at that point, they beat the tar out of each other, he and Fred. And I mean, it's difficult to say, but Gary J could possibly be even a harder hitter than Fred Yehi. So Kane definitely has his work cut out for him. It's going to be a rough night. Both he and Gary J are going to be black and blue and red and purple, and they're going to beat each other up with very, very hard strikes. I think Gary's experience edge is going to pull the win here. I know that Kane Justice has he has more of a jiu-jitsu kind of background as well, but I think Gary J is going to implement his game plan, and Gary J is going to get the win.
Yeah, I want Gary J, but I think my mind is going with Kane Justice, so we'll go ahead and stick there. our first maybe disagreement or difference of opinions there. Next one, PCO versus Cyrus the Destroyer.
This match is going to be hard-hitting, but for a different reason. I mean, Cyrus, if anybody's ever seen him, he wrestles primarily within Georgia, Georgia Premier, Deep South. He's done some various other places in the state of Georgia, but he is humongous and he has unreal strength. Picking up and throwing around 300-plus pound men with relative ease. But if you've seen any of the things that PCO has done, you know, since I guess really in the last couple months since he was at Joey Janela's spring break and he had that very, very, very hard hitting match with Walter. This could be huge. It's two big guys and they're yet again, they're just gonna bring it. They're gonna beat the tar out of each other. I think Cyrus, you know, has been kind of the big fish in the state of Georgia for a long time, and this is an opportunity for him to break out of just being the big guy in Georgia. A win here over PCO and advancement in this tournament could be huge for the stock of Cyrus and you know, he raising his profile in the wrestling world, not just the Southeast, but PCO is coming down here. PCO is, and, you know, I mean, he's not going to let anybody push him around. He's not willing to allow himself to be anybody's stepping stone. I do really like Cyrus, and I think I get Cyrus to win in this first round.
Well, I'm going to defer from you because right now I don't think anyone should be, betting against PCO. The man, it's crazy hot right now, and he's doing amazing things. I'm going with PCO on this one. All right, Darius Lockhart versus Jake Purnell.
I like the Warhorse. I like the Warhorse a lot. I know that Darius Lockhart is probably a little bit more willing to use the bend the rules to his advantage, but I do like the Warhorse, and I think that he's one of those guys who's going to be breaking out in the next year or two as a top competitor in the independent scene. So I'm gonna take the Warhorse Jake Purnell in this one.
Yeah, I'm going with Darius Lockhart here. I like the work that he's been doing in the Carolinas, and this is definitely a for him the opportunity to step up and get to the next level. I think a win here can get him there. Next, Fred Yehi versus Mance Warner.
It seems like this first round is just full of extremely hard hitting matches. I mean, Mance Warner, you know, he's been making a name for himself, and that name is based on hard strikes. But Fred Yehi, although he is an extremely hard striker, there's a lot more to Fred Yehi's game. And I think I Fred Yehi, along as we mentioned with Joe Black, they're two of my favorite guys to watch in the independent scene. I don't think there's a whole lot of people that are more interesting, more intriguing in professional wrestling as far as their style than Fred Yehi. So I have to go with Fred.
Yeah, I am never gonna root against my personal good friend Fred Yehi. So I'm going with Fred here. I think that he's known to have great matches. He'll have a great one with Warner here, and he'll pick up the W because, you know, he's as tough as they come. All right, this is another one of the of those that I said could be match of the night candidates. Joey Lynch versus Curt Stallion.
Well, I mean, these are both guys who really can kind of credit their rise in bookings and popularity and profile in the wrestling world to the Phoenix City. You know, Joey Lynch was kind of that standout guy in the first FCI. He was, you know, he'd been primarily known as a tag team competitor with his brother Matt as the Lynch Mob, but the Phoenix City, the first Phoenix City Invitational, Joey was was kind of a guy everybody started looking at. And then that second year, you know, the where he ended up losing in the second round to the eventual winner, Gunnar Miller. But Joey Lynch, I think, was the guy that people walked away talking about. And I know he wants, he probably, you know, his profile has raised. He's had a lot more opportunities in the wrestling world. Since then, you know, he's had appearances with FIP and Style Battle and Evolve. But yet again, Curt Stallion, also somebody who kind of who was a standout in his past appearances in the Southeast. You know, had some appearances with AWE, was in ROH's top prospect tournament. To me, this is the one that really could go either way. Because I know that both men are not going to want to disappoint. Both men are really, really wanting to win it this year. So to me, this is the one match that really could go either way. It's pretty much too close to call for me.
That definitely, it's truly the case. Either these guys could take the W. But I'm going with Curt Stallion. I think that he's young and hungry, as is Joey. But, you know, we see Joey in the finals, and I think that Curt not getting there yet, he has something to prove. I think that he might just go in and try to make it happen for, you know, for himself to get to the finals. And I think that these two competitors definitely will put on a show, and yeah, they'll do great things. But yeah, I've got Stallion here. And finally, the match that he's been asking for. Kerry Awful has been wanting this man, and he got him. Awful versus Nick Gage in the first round of the Cynic City Invitational.
I mean, yeah, Kerry's been asking for it, you know, but he's, of course, known as a tag team wrestler. His singles career, you know, his singles matches, you know, he maybe only has a few a year. But he wanted Nick Gage one-on-one. He wanted to prove that he is as tough as anybody. And Nick Gage is definitely a guy who's known, you know, to be as tough as they come. He's primarily a deathmatch competitor and has pretty much won or been a finalist in every single deathmatch tournament that America's produced, you know. So if this one can stay within the confines of a traditional wrestling rules matchup, I think I have to give it to Kerry. If somehow this match gets sanctioned to be anything goes, if they get kind of relaxed rules on this, I have to give it to Nick Gage. But I think Kerry wants to do more than just show that he can survive a Nick Gage match. I think he wants to show that he can beat and pin Nick Gage's shoulders to the mat. So I have to, in the confines and the rules of the Cena City Invitational Tournament, I have to give this win to Kerry Awful.
Yeah, with that one, I'm going to Nick Gage because MDK, baby. Gage, you know, he pulled no punches. I know all Kerry won either, but man, Nick Gage, that's not somebody I'm going to bet against anytime soon. So that does it, man. That's a pretty nice looking lineup there. Looking forward to Cine City Invitational this summer, August 3rd, August 4th. Already have my tickets, already have the hotel. I'm all ready to go, and it's going to be an exciting time. So everybody make sure you get tickets. Send a message on the Twitter machine at Dylan Waco so you can reserve your tickets. There's still some floor tickets available, but, you know, as over the next few weeks, they're going to sell, you know, likely to sell out. So make sure you get those or your general admission tickets. But buying tickets, you know, early will allow you to get first entry into the gym so you can get your seat, as there's no reserved seating. So first come, first serve. So you'll be one of the first to get there, get in, get your tickets early at Dylan Waco, or you can go to dylanwaco@gmail.com for those tickets. SCI, the Sydney City Invitational, it'll be August 3rd and 4th. And, man, at Saudi Daisy High School, it may never be the same again. I'll tell you that much. And so lastly, Danny, I want to chat some about New Japan Pro Wrestling. Of course, the G1 Climax is coming up. And we will eventually get to talk about the schedule and the different matches. But before we get to the G1 Climax, we are going to get the G1 special in San Francisco at the Cow Palace. And now we have a full lineup for the matches. All right. So here we go. First, in 10-man tag team action, we're going to have the team of Chaos versus the team of Bullet Club going 5-on-5. And this will include King Haku. Interesting matchup there with King Haku, who I've seen on spots, but I haven't seen him wrestle in a long time. Danny, this is something you're looking forward to seeing, the former Ming, King Haku, here with his sons, and you hear Takahashi and Chase Owens against Chaos.
I mean, at this point, it's kind of what's known as, you know, the New Japan multi-man match. You know, they have throughout the year where it's usually 4-on-4, 5-on-5 of the warring factions. So they bring that to the Cow Palace in San Francisco, which for you wrestling trivia nerds out there, not wrestling trivia, but it was where I saw my first ever live wrestling show. It was at the Cow Palace in San Francisco. It was a WCW house show back in 1997. Main event was a Texas death match between DDP and the Macho Man, Randy Savage. So that was Young Danger's first ever live wrestling show at the tender age of 15 in the Cow Palace in San Francisco. So I think that's one of those big historic buildings in professional wrestling. They've had so many great names come there. It's such an old venue. And it's just, I think that's great that New Japan is playing homage and honoring all the history that's come through the Cow Palace. But, you know, the show's going to, if that's the first match on the card as it's listed, they're going to start the action off hot. You know, you have the Bullet Club, of course, the hottest faction in wrestling, against the younger, faster members of the Chaos faction with Yoshihashi and Rocky and then Yo and Cho. It's gonna be a barn burner. Get the crowd warmed up right.
Yeah, so then followed up tag team match, Tomohiro Ishii and Toru Yano versus Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. One of those is not the same as the other.
Yeah, I mean, one of those teams is, you know, two of the greatest professional wrestlers in history, and the other two are members of Chaos.
So, yeah, Zack Sabre Jr., whoever thought that he'd be signed to a contract to be in tag team matches. But, hey, as long as the man is getting paid, right?
Hey, I mean, he gets, in New Japan, I think the wrestlers get a wide array of stuff. They get the tag team matches, then they get, they get their singles matches. They get their multi-man, but I think they get a lot of diverse competition in New Japan. And, of course, the learnings for you that you can sit under there are just, I think that is probably invaluable. I mean, to be in Suzuki-Gun and be teaming with Minoru Suzuki, you know, and just kind of under his tutelage, I think that is probably invaluable to
to a wrestler. Just the things you can learn from him.
So next up, Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kushida versus Hangman Page and Marty Scurll.
I definitely have to go with Taguchi Japan team on that. Kushida and Tanahashi. Kushida's one of my favorite light heavyweights to watch. And Tanahashi, I mean, the one in a hundred, you know, the once in a century talent. I mean, that team right there is arguably one of the greatest heavyweights of all time and one of the greatest light heavyweights of all time. How can you bet against those guys?
Yeah, definitely. I like Tanahashi and Kushida on this one. Patience Curl, I mean, they're like nice, like B team Bullet Club. I know that they're like on being the elite and all that, but yeah, I'm not sold on those guys. All right, for the Never Open Weight Championship, Hiroki Goto is defending against Jeff Cobb. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I mean, Cobb has made a handful of appearances with New Japan, but he's not one of their usual contracted roster members. But I'm happy to see him back. I definitely like Jeff Cobb. But, you know, he's an amazing athlete as far as the things he can do in a professional wrestling ring. The strength and the agility are just unreal. And Hiroki Goto, you know, is a fantastic Never Open Weight champion. You know, having been a longtime stalwart of New Japan, I think I have to go with Goto in this one. I think he's just got the experience edge over Cobb.
Then we get the IWGP Tag Team Championships on the line as the Young Bucks defend against Sanada and Evil.
I mean, this is a rematch, you know, from a recent New Japan event where it saw the Young Bucks win the IWGP Tag Team Championship. But Sanada and Evil had a very strong game plan when Matt Jackson actually missed a super kick and hit the ring post, you know, very injuring his foot. Very severely, and the Los Ingobernables, you know, stayed on top of his injured foot and kept working, and that hindered a lot of the usual double-team high-flying offense of the Bucks. But the Bucks showed that they're more than just a handful of things to maneuvers. Even when a lot of those maneuvers were compromised, they were still able to get the win. If Sanada and Evil can find another game plan like that and stick to it, I think that they could reclaim those tag team championships. But I think the Young Bucks are, you know, I mean, they're the Young Bucks. They're arguably the greatest, one of the greatest teams, not only in professional wrestling, you know, currently, but possibly ever. And I think that the Young Bucks definitely retain here in America.
Next, we'll get for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, Hiromu Takahashi versus Dragon Lee. Now, this was a guaranteed bang. These guys have done a lot of great stuff outside of New Japan, and they're guaranteed to have a great match here. Could be match of the night.
Yeah, this very easily could be match tonight, but I have to give it to the Time Bomb. I think that he's just a hard puzzle for people to crack at this point in his career. He brings a kind of a frenzied style that a lot of people just can't prepare for. And I think that as long as he can keep his head on straight, as long as he doesn't get kind of too distracted with the comedy stuff, with, you know, the stuffed cat, you know, and all that stuff he was doing for quite some time. If Takahashi can stay stay focused on doing what he does better than few in this world, I think he could be the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion for a very long time.
Yep. Then we get Kashika Okada and Will Ospreay versus Tetsuya Naito and Bushi.
I need another a long-standing match between two long-standing factions. All these men have traded a lot of victories and wins for their faction. Even though he did lose the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, I still think that you are an idiot if you bet against Okada. I think that he, although he was on the losing end to Kenny Omega, I still do think that Okada is one of the greatest of all time. And yet again, for that reason, it's hard to bet against him, no matter who he's against.
And then for the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship, Jay White versus Juice Robinson.
I think I have to go with Juice on this one. I think Juice is getting and amassing quite a following, and I feel that they would possibly do some kind of title switch here for this show because it is such a big show in the United States. So why not have the United States Championship change hands? I like Jay White, but I think Juice is just connecting with fans in a different way right now. And this could be Juice's time to step out as a performer.
And in your main event of the evening for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, the Cleaner, Kenny Omega, defends his championship against Cody Rhodes.
Well, this Bullet Club versus Bullet Club, which Cody claims the Bullet Club is fine. But this match, was very, very close to being a champion versus champion match, going into a big ROH match. Cody said that if he won, the Ring of Honor Championship, that he would make this match Ring of Honor Championship versus the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Cody was not on the winning end of his contest. Did not win the Ring of Honor Championship, but still had this match with Kenny Omega signed. We've seen these guys fight before. We've seen a little infighting with the Bullet Club, who's siding with who, et cetera, et cetera. But Kenny Omega and Cody are two of the best in the world, and they're definitely going to show out. But I think that riding the momentum from winning the championship, from finally getting the long time elusive big win over Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP Championship, I think that Kenny Omega, he had to bring his training, he had to bring his focus and his career to a different level in order to defeat Okada. And I think that for that reason, he's still going to stay on that level of training. And I think Cody's not going to have an answer for him. I think this is Kenny Omega's match.
Truly indeed. Kenny Omega will put Cody in his place. Now that Kenny has not only his best friend, Kota Ibushi, by his side, but with the Young Bucks, the four of them make the Golden Elite to battle the Bullet Club, any version of Cody's. It's going to be wonderful. So it's going to be a great show, the G1 special. Of course, it's going to air in the United States on Access TV. And the rest of the world on New Japan World. For those that don't have Access TV, you can check the VOD just like I will later on once it's available online. But that's going to happen. this Saturday, and it's going to be happening at in San Francisco. Place still, I don't think still sold out yet. But yeah, this great card, I think that it's going to do very well. Can't wait to get to watch it and see Cody get put in his place after I had to see him beat Kenny Omega at Supercard of Honor back in April. So, yeah, man, the G1 special ready to kick off the G1 climax. And, again, we'll probably be talking about that next week or so. Get a good look at all the matches and the schedule. But, man, I'm pretty excited. This G1 is going to have a lot of great matches. That B block, man, I'm loving it. But Danny, I can't wait to see a show with you again. I can't wait for you to be back, and hopefully the both of us will be, you know, side by side enjoying some beers as we watch some wrestling on July the 29th at the Opera Nightclub for AWE's season finale, Homegrown 2018. And thank you all for listening. Of course, you can check out every episode of the every episode of Defensive Wrestling show, as well as any other audio goodness that we could come up with on the FOW Radio Network. So make sure that you subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, Google Play. Give us some feedback. We'd love to get your star ratings on iTunes, so please go on and take care of that for us if you will. Then also check us out on the Twitter machine. We're on Twitter at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling. Thank you.